On this episode of You Should Be Watching, we talk about how the Suicide Squad and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 will not be delayed. We also talk about the first image from the new Dune movie, and we pick the best kaiju movies. That's all this week on You Should Be Watching. Hey guys, and welcome to a new episode of You Should Be Watching. This week we have another guest that you might not have seen on our channel, Mr. Kurt Indovina. Kurt, hey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Greetings, and it is a massive pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. And also joining us today is Greg. Greg's back this week. Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How's everyone else doing out there? Hey, Kurt. Haven't talked to you in a little bit.
Hey, Greg.
Miss you.
Getting by. Oh, I miss both of you. It's been a bit.
Well, high five. Or I don't know if we're allowed to do that for
air
a while.
Five.
Whoosh, long distance.
There it is. Yeah, there it is. But yeah, Kurt usually gives us high fives at the end of the day when we're in the GameSpot office, and it always brings us joy. So
high 5 o'clock.
Yeah, you've just been a very warm presence in the office. But now we're all at home. But for those who don't know who you are, can you tell us who you are and what you do at GameSpot?
I am a host and writer for a plethora of different things and shows for both games and entertainment for GameSpot Universe. So to narrow it down, I host and write True Fiction, which is on GameSpot Universe. And then I host and write another show. Thank you, Greg. And then I write and host Remember When, which is on the other GameSpot main, which is video game channel, should we say.
YouTube.com/GameSpot.
That one.
Shut up. Yeah. Yeah, you did an episode about the Hadouken that I got to be on, so thank you for that.
You are very welcome. And it was an honor, because I'm bad at Street Fighter, and you're good at Street Fighter. So it worked
Certain
out.
Street Fighters, but thank
Certain
you.
Certain Street Fighters. Sure. I'm bad at all of them.
So it's okay. Yeah.
What's your favorite character?
I suck at Smash.
Oh, I can't. I like Smash. Okay. One button, boom, 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 boom. That's boom. It.
I'm trying. I'm learning. But oh yeah. So who is your favorite character in Street Fighter?
In Street Fighter?
Yeah.
I like the dude who is portrayed by that wonderful actor.
I'm like Guile?
M. Bison?
Yes.
Are we talking about M. Bison? We're talking
about Bison. It's Bison. It's gotta be Bison.
I like him.
Me too.
Because he's very stern, and he floats a little bit, and he's got a really great outfit. But I think my attachment solely comes from the American film, solely just because of.
Oh yeah, that's a guilty pleasure for me too.
Yeah,
for him Same. It was a Tuesday.
So great movie. It was just the Tuesday.
Not great. But for me, it was a Tuesday. Right. So
Raul Julia, by the way.
That's yes, the actor. He's great. He's great. So we ask this question to every guest that comes on the show. So what are three shows or movies that would explain your personality, Kurt?
Can I do two movies and a show?
Yes, you can. Okay. Any mix.
This was troubling, by the way, to develop and like, try and think this through.
It's hard.
I thought I was able to narrow it down to one, but that one just wasn't enough. So anyways, first up, I think the first thing that like intuitively came to mind is Jackie Chan's Police Story. So like the reason behind this is because it is the perfect, like Jackie Chan as a whole is something I love dearly.
We know you're a huge fan. Yes.
A little bit. But Jackie Chan's Police Story specifically is like an all-encompassing of incredible Hong Kong action and with slapstick humor. And then, of course, an incredible like wave of genuine drama and crime. And action that all encompasses Jackie Chan's Police Story.
Yeah.
And like all three of those things, like slapstick humor, crime and police stories, and then of course action. It was like, that's like those hit three of the most major dots for me personally, especially as a child. I used to like pretend to be Jackie Chan and I broke too many windows that I want to admit.
Wait a minute. You have to tell us at least one story.
Oh, then. There's two.
Please.
Okay. I'll make them very quick. So basically, like I used to spend a large sum of my childhood pretending to be Jackie Chan and pretending to make my own Jackie Chan action films as though I looked like Jackie Chan too, which is really bizarre. I'll have to show a picture, but like it's really quite really uncanny. Like same weird bowl haircut from the 80s and everything. Anyways, there's this infamous story of I was in my backyard and I had a baseball bat and I was pretending to be attacked by all of these dudes. And in the process, when they would attack me, I would like jump out of the way. And because Jackie Chan just throws himself into everything, I started throwing myself into backyard furniture while whipping this baseball bat around. And in doing so, I shattered this bird bath and I rolled over a table and the legs burst out underneath it. And now you're probably thinking like, where were your parents?
Yes. My brother. Were they watching?
My brother is babysitting me. Babysitting. And he was actually watching from the kitchen window, just watching as I tore apart the yard, just waiting patiently for my parents to get home. So
nice.
In the end, he was just as accountable as I was. Another story is I used to run into my house and I kick my shoes off. Like I used to jump and do a double kick to kick them off because I felt like Jackie Chan doing it. Except one day I did that and one of my shoes went straight through the front window.
Okay.
And when my parents got home, they're like, Kurt, what happened? And I was like, our dog jumped on me and I fell through the window. And now I feel I have like a horrible, tremendous guilt of blaming my dog for that incident. And
poor dog.
I hope she's forgiven me. But yeah. So that's not those aren't the only stories. I've broken other windows, but those are like the two ones that are reoccurring in my Jackie Chan.
Okay, back to the list then.
Back
two
to the
more
list.
Shows or movies. What's the number two?
Number two is Godzilla 1954.
Ooh.
So the reason why I picked this one specifically is because I have a weird, so of course it's not weird, but I have an infatuation with giant monsters destroying stuff. That's that I think all
more
three
to come
know.
Later.
More
good
to come
foreshadowing
later.
For the rest of the episode.
But
continue.
I specifically chose the original 1954 one because it is a serious, very melodramatic, sad movie, and I think those two things are reoccurring. Where I like fantastical, over the top, make believery, but then I also like very serious stories mixed within those things, and that one just hits that spot for me. We're getting a very specific like dumb action and but also melodrama. This is like the reoccurring theme.
Okay.
For defining.
And number three.
Number three is Mr. Bean, the show as a whole.
I love the movie too.
This is good.
So like going back to like the slapstick part of Police Story, Mr. Bean just is, I genuinely feel is, defines my comedy or like,
this checks out.
Yeah, this checks out. And, I think unabashedly Rowan Atkinson is a comic genius and, Mr. Bean is peak pinnacle mastermind to me and makes my heart beat.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever talked about Mr. Bean, but this totally makes sense to me.
There's a plastic Mr. Bean on my desk.
Oh.
He's on my monitor.
Wow, I need to pay more attention.
No,
I'm sorry.
Fine. I barely have anything on my desk except for that. That is like one of the few mementos that like linger somewhere there. But Mr. Bean is very near and dear to me.
Yes, you've got a very simple way of decorating. As we can see behind you, one single picture of Twin Peaks. There it is. Very nice. If you can't see it because you're listening to the audio, check it out on youtube.com/gamespotuniverse.
It's also, for those listening, it is a Scott C. print. He actually does a ton of video game art, which is like he did the art for Psychonauts. And,
nice.
But he also has a series
fine
of...
Fine game by a fine studio.
Fine, double fine, you would say. That's two fines. he also has a series of books called The Great Showdowns, and all, like an ongoing art collection where it's like these very simplistic. My cat's joining us, by the way.
My cat's
a
over
cat
my shoulder.
On the podcast.
You can't see it. The mic's here, but yeah.
Okay.
Oh, cats on the podcast.
There's cats everywhere here.
Anyway, Scott C is great, and he does wonderful renditions of pop culture art. So that's what that is, a Twin Peaks one.
Very nice. All right, the next segment is What's on Your TV. Every week we recommend something that we're currently watching. So, Greg, I'm going to start with you. What are you watching?
Sopranos. It's Ooh. Just, a, I know, I get it. But really, honestly, at this time, I really want to watch The Sopranos. I've been watching a lot of that in Veep. Two HBO shows.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, yeah, nothing at all. I'm catching up with a few other things, but I'll save that for later on. That have just come back. But for now, I'm trying to get out of Star Trek for a second, and I want to see some
We've
just
spent
some heads
a lot
bashed.
Of time in Star Trek. Yeah,
yeah, no, I need something else. I need some Christopher from Sopranos in my life right now. he's getting me through this, so I'm just going yeah. with that. It's a
nice.
Really...
So ultimately, what is it about The Sopranos that makes it so rewatchable?
Oh, the characters. Easy. Yeah. For mm-hmm. me, it's always in the heart of the characters and the writing. So any show that's going to attract me, again, of course, Mad Men, stuff like that, it's going to get me because just the characters. As long as you're following the characters from beginning to end, I can't think of a show that's had a better go from beginning to end with each character and then developing these characters and then, you know, pulling through and actually, you know, finishing these characters and their stories off in a way that really pays respect to how they've been from beginning to end compared to a few other shows that...
Yeah,
they came out to HBO maybe like what a year ago or so, but mm-hmm. I'll just say that.
So I would love your take on the ending. What did you think of the ending of The Sopranos?
Okay, when I
like when you initially watched it,
well,
and
yeah,
now.
When I initially watched yeah. it, yes, I thought mm-hmm. like everyone else that the TV just went out and that it was like a joke and someone hacked the mainframe and they shut it down. Going back at it now, it's a perfect ending. I'm sorry. I really love that ending. I'm coming from someone who hates the ending to Lost with a passion. Who has, I think my best friends, they watched me after the ending of Lost, and they'll never forget my face. And I never got up from my chair where I was sitting watching it for probably, I think they said about like 15 minutes. I was just sitting there kind of with a confused look on my face. I don't remember a thing. I blanked out, but Sopranos, no, there's nothing like that. Sopranos, you felt this was coming. You knew this was coming. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone who's looking for some kind of like bloodbath, this is not that kind of show.
Yeah, for sure. But I agree. Like, it's such a rewatchable show, and right now like is a great time to just look back at past shows that were totally bingeable because we have the time, right? It's like we've always had these backlogs of shows we meant to rewatch or shows that we never finished, mm-hmm. and now is a really good opportunity to finally go back to that backlog and actually watch these shows.
I'm not gonna lie, has anyone else had this weird thing go on? I know I can't be the only one. Like, there's some shows I watch, like Top Chef, or mm-hmm. where they're in like big. Since we're in a pandemic, I watch a few things. Like, someone's like rubbing someone's head and putting their hand in their face. Like, don't do that. Stop.
Oh yeah.
No. There's too many shows, and I am finding myself getting a little triggered every once in a while. Sopranos, when someone goes. Yeah, no, stop. Wash your hands, please, God.
Yeah. I think, I don't know what show it was, but someone was just like, oh, you got a little something, did this. I'm like, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
But I freaked out. But yeah, it's just something that we would never, ever freak out about that now we're super sensitive to. But yeah, it's a thing. I'm currently rewatching Community. I mentioned it two episodes ago when we were talking about shows to binge watch, mm-hmm. but I had not actually gone back to it. But now, this past week, I just binged through the entire season one. I have one episode left, so 25 episodes in that season. I was surprised that there were that many episodes, but also that's just Damn. How they did comedies. Yeah, but there were 25 episodes. But usually, like, with a season one, even for some NBC comedies, like, they only
that's
did
a
certain
that's
amount
a
90s of episodes.
OG
yeah.
run for a TV
yeah,
show.
But were they,
right?
Yeah. Where, how long are Community episodes?
They're like 25 minutes.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
They're
okay.
short. They're short. But still, it's... I was just surprised by how many there were. And also I was surprised by how incredibly strong and like well-written and just hitting its stride right off the bat in season one. Like I'm floored by how quickly it found its footing and its style. And I think that's attributed to mm-hmm. the casting and to strong writing from Dan Harmon, and the dialogue is just really clever. Yeah, there's a lot to love about it.
When
like
the show...
Troy and Abed and like the whole cast together and all the parodies that they do. What were you saying?
Oh, I was going to say, when did the show go on hiatus the first time around? What season?
Oh, so it was on NBC through season 5, I want to say. And then they did Yahoo Screen for a random season.
Okay.
So there was that weird time. But yeah, the fans have been wanting, you know, it's always been six seasons and a movie was the saying, but like, there's still no movie yet, but they're still holding out for a movie, and I would love one. But so at the end of season one, they started to do a lot of meta humor and dive into parody. And that's when they did this episode called Contemporary American Poultry, which was a mafia movie parody.
I think I've seen this
chicken
one.
Tenders.
I've it's heard of, so this good. Is like, it's a, basically like it's a remake of
it's Goodfellas. Yeah.
Okay.
It's Goodfellas, but with chicken tenders, and it's brilliant. I love it so much. And then that's when they did the first episode of the paintball episodes that became like a random bit that they did every single season. And they had Fast and Furious director Justin Lin direct that one. And it's just full of action movie tropes and diehard references and Rambo shots and lines. And it's really good.
Okay.
But yeah, watch it. Everyone should watch Community. It's so good. It's weird now, but like most of the season was directed by the Russo brothers, and they did so much for Community, and that's why they used recurring actors from the show in
and
future MCU movies.
Yeah,
and do cameos.
Yep.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But yeah, that's what I've been watching. Kurt, what have you been watching lately?
I'm a horrible TV person, by the way. I've never finished The Sopranos. I always watched it in fragments growing up. And it's also I come from a fairly stereotypical Italian family, so it was always like bah, 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 about The Sopranos all the time.
Oh yeah, the first season of that show is rough. It's a lot of O's.
Exactly. It shouldn't be. And I've never seen Community either. I feel like a terrible I must say, like, I've always been pretty bad with TV. I've always been first and foremost a movie dude. And then there's just only been a few TV shows that have like pulled me in, not just Mr. Bean.
Yes. But we also talk about movies in this section. So are you watching any movies right now, or what have you been watching this past week?
On my quarantine isolation, I've been watching 80s Jeff Goldblum movies. That's been
nice.
Kind of an unintentional 80s. Spiral that's happened.
The Fly?
No, no. See, like, I'm too familiar with The Fly. I like David Cronenberg and The Fly are too close to me, so I'm trying to like stretch out into in weirder corners of films that I have not seen.
Okay. Are there any that you recommend more than others?
I mean, I don't know if I'd recommend any of them that I've seen so far. Maybe actually, no, that's not true. I stand corrected. There's one that I will always recommend because this movie is near and dear to me, and that is The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Either one of you seen that movie?
I have not seen that movie, and
oh,
I've been
God.
Called out for her. I have been
and
yelled at for not seeing
all
that movie.
All-star cast of the century, like Clancy Brown, Peter Weller, Jeff Goldblum, Christopher Lloyd, John Lithgow. It's sorry, yep. I always gush about how ridiculous that that movie is. Anyways, so we started with Earth Girls Are Easy, which was like a fever dream.
Oh, I've seen that one too.
To revisit.
Jim Carrey's in that, right?
He is.
Yes, he is.
And so is one of the Waynes. What is his name?
Damon? Or is it Keenan Ivory?
It's escaping my mind. Yes.
They were all bald at some point, though.
Yeah, but early on, he was... Anyways, furthermore, and then Into the Night, which is I watched just recently, which is a John Landis movie, which I've never seen.
Haven't seen that one.
Yeah, post... Mm-hmm. I think it was after American Werewolf in London and after Blues Brothers, but that was like a overnight silly romance crime film in which like Jeff Goldblum, is it Michelle Pfeiffer? Yes, Michelle Pfeiffer's on the run out of nowhere, and they serendipitously she runs into his car physically, and then he picks her up and gets her away from these mugs that are trying to get her, and then it spirals into this big conspiracy of what she's running from. And I would recommend that one. I would recommend that in Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. Earth Girls Are Easy is
probably doesn't hold up as well.
I don't know if it held up. Yeah. I mean, I can't say if it held up then either, but it was quite.
You can't say that for many 80s films. You got to be like, oh, hold on.
Yeah. Yes. So that has been an ongoing kind of spiral that I find myself in.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, Twin Peaks is constant comfort food. So
yeah,
can you put it on in the
just
background?
Keeping that on in the background.
Can you?
It is
jinx.
Yeah, exactly.
You owe me a Coke.
So that's it. Buckaroo Banzai. That's what I would recommend watching, if you can. I will also say it is it's a lot. Like the movie throws a lot at you, and it's bizarre. And it was supposed to get a sequel, never did.
Oh.
Because it failed.
Well, that's too bad. The next section is This Just In, where we talk about the biggest stories of the last week, and we've got two stories today. The first one is that Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and the Suicide Squad will not be delayed, according to James Gunn. So Gunn said that the Suicide Squad, which is slated to release August 6, 2021, on Twitter he said that, quote, "Right now there's no reason for the Suicide Squad release date to move. We are on and ahead of schedule. We were extremely fortunate to wrap shooting and set up editing from our homes due to a post-production team and studio with foresight before quarantine." So they're on track. That's good news. We're getting constant news about delays, so this is something different. How do you guys feel about the Suicide Squad movie?
I'm all for it. It's 2021. I have to say that over and over again, because I thought for a second Gunn was talking about 2020 August. I was like, unless he knows something the CDC doesn't, we'll see. But 2021, yeah. I'm totally fine with that. I'm all for it. And also, I don't know what this movie's gonna be. I was not a fan at all.
None of us
for Suicide Squad,
the 2016 movie.
Yeah, I could care less about anything that was gonna happen in the future of Suicide Squad. But the second they
based
hired,
on that film, yeah.
Yes. But the second they hired James Gunn, my interest just to see what could this possibly be with this man in charge and writing it at the end of the day. Oh, I feel like this movie may be just too much for us to handle as I think as a fandom, because I feel like this is just going to be filled with a weird assortment of Easter eggs and just inside jokes from beginning to end. And I can't wait to see it. I wonder how much of this movie is going to get chopped up. Maybe not chopped up, because if we're in lockdown and the editing process is going and they can't really, you know, go back like they did with the last Suicide Squad and start chopping this movie up into pieces, and they stick with whatever James Gunn has as the edit. I can't wait to see this in August if they stick with the date.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating. I'm just like,
they said it's like a standalone sequel to the 2016 movie. So it's still a sequel. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's so bizarre. Yeah.
Even crazy.
I find So I had a lot of weird apprehension of James Gunn like through most of his career, and it wasn't actually until I saw Guardians, the first Guardians,
same,
that like,
yeah,
I was like,
I think we all felt that way.
I felt like that. I still think that the first Guardians, in my opinion, might be the best Marvel movie.
Dude, it's top three for me.
Yeah,
and that changes every day.
Yeah, and given and like based off of if we're to equate like what Birds of Prey just did, and like the direction that DC is going in, kind of like how they're giving a little bit more leverage to their filmmakers in a way, opposed to maybe what Marvel does. And if you give James Gunn, who has proven himself to be able to handle a crew of crazy, eccentric, weird characters, and then give him maybe an R rating, are we good? Like, is that safe to assume?
I don't know. If
I
it's going to be
R rating set for
I,
it yet.
I know, but. Just based off of what we got with Birds of Prey, which I loved, and given James Gunn the ability to do hopefully what I assume what he wants with this weird crew of characters, I think I'm super excited. Like, I can't wait to see what it is. And
yeah,
they
had this long list. I remember this like poster type thing, just teasing the entire cast and how many names they had on it. But a lot of the names are still undisclosed roles. But so the only set ones we have: Margot Robbie's back as Harley Quinn, Viola Davis is Amanda Waller, Joel Kinnaman's gonna be Rick Flag. I liked him in season one of Altered Carbon. Then we've got Captain Boomerang, Polka Dot Man, Ratcatcher, and King Shark. And those are the only confirmed roles we have so far. Interesting.
I'm excited for King Shark.
Yeah,
I'm a big King Shark fan.
I like King
read
Shark.
The comics. Yeah,
he'll be in one frame.
No, no, he'll have more to do.
It'll be a bit.
Maybe because he's CG, I think. So I mean, he has to be, right? How ridiculous would it be if he was not CG?
Exactly.
That'd be pretty fun.
I would love it if they have somebody walk through frame and saying the VA budget wasn't complete, pandemic, go through like just a comp of something as a joke.
Yeah,
I don't think.
Yeah, but they still have a bunch of actors that don't have dedicated roles or disclosed roles. Idris Elba, John Cena, Nathan Fillion, Peter Capaldi, Pete Davidson, Taika Waititi, Michael Rooker. Who are they going to play?
Voice.
I really want to know.
Weird. Yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah. I think Idris was supposed to be Deadshot, and then that didn't
Will
work
Smith
out, so he's going to be
back?
A different...
Or, yeah.
Filming's done, so shouldn't we know by now? Mm. No one said. No one has said, but yeah. I'm excited for this movie. But also, Guardians 3, also excited for that. Yeah, we were just talking about how good Guardians 1 was. I agree with that. I liked Guardians 2, but Guardians 1 was obviously a lot better. But Guardians 3 doesn't have a release date yet, and many are speculating that it's probably going to be around like 2022. But James Gunn said that nothing is changing. He said, right now the plans with Volume 3 are also exactly the same as they were before coronavirus. But he also said last week that the third movie will have a payoff for Rocket Raccoon, and he says that a lot of what we've seen so far sets up what he's been planning for Rocket all along. Yeah. I'm excited
Makes
to see
sense.
More Rocket.
Yeah, I think this was going to be an origin story for Rocket a little bit. You're going to find out more about his backstory. I think that was the original plan. I hope they go through with it. It sounds like they are. So that
I love Rocket Raccoon. I think he's one of my favorite MCU characters right now.
Oh, Bradley Cooper. That man. God.
I never picture Bradley Cooper when I'm watching
His
Rocket.
Career.
I just see Rocket.
That man's career.
I think he does a great job. Yeah, he's doing great. Love it. All right. Next story. The Dune movie has a first image. So this comes from a new article and revealed by Vanity Fair, who had the exclusive. And the first image from the new Dune, this will be directed by Denis Villeneuve. I can't pronounce his name. I'm sorry.
Denis Villeneuve.
Someone try.
I think it's Denis Villeneuve.
Someone try. Thank you. Denis.
Denis Villeneuve. Not Dennis. It's Denis.
No, it's Denis. Yeah. Of Blade Runner 2049 fame. And so Vanity Fair showed the first picture, and it shows Timothée Chalamet, who everyone loves. He's in the lead role, and he's playing Paul Atreides.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, I know that you're a big fan, Kurt. So, what do you think of this? What
I can't
do you think
wait.
Of the image?
So, first off, his Blade Runner is incredible. Like,
yes.
I think 2049 is so, so good. And
it's incredible.
It's incredible. And I just, it's like one of those, the moment after I saw that, I was like, this dude could just do anything and I'd be excited for it. And in this case, I'm also a huge David Lynch Dune fan as well.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, are you? Oh yes. Oh yes.
That one's got a lot of mixed reviews, but
I'll take
you know.
All of them.
David Lynch just all, like his hair just went up on his back a little bit. He felt.
Yeah. Oh,
like
I'll take. I know he has his own hot takes on it and feelings, but I love that movie in all of its forms. Sting. Yeah. Anyways, so seeing this image, I mean, like it's a still, but one thing that I think it's doing well is like this dude. I can't say his name either. I'm so sorry.
Chalamet, Timothy, or
Denis.
Just say Denis. Like, everyone says Denis.
Denis.
Everyone say Denis.
Time everywhere. The Times. They all say Denis.
Yeah.
I mean, like, of course, it's easy to get overly excited over a single image, or just, I mean, it's just good to see anything. But the one thing I really do appreciate is that it is keeping just in Paul's character, like this dark, gloomy, almost goth-like look, which is
Kylo Ren vibe.
Yeah, which is when I imagine myself in my mind's eye, I just imagine this image now. I'm like, yes, that's me. That's who I wish I was. But I can't wait. And I, as a fan of Dune in all its forms. From although it's been many years since I've seen the Sci-Fi Channel one, I remember taping that.
I never saw that one.
Yeah, I taped it on VHS back in
really?
2000. Yeah, because I was so excited for it. But it's one of those things where I'm instilling trust in this dude because I thought Blade Runner 2049 was so good, and I just think the guy has such an incredible. I mean, he comes from a world of cinematography, and not that that's all things, but he's proven himself to be able to handle heady things in an approachably entertaining way.
I hope he gets more
completely capable.
Like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And dude,
I hope
like,
this does well.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's also this dude has a knack for taking on things that
fail,
really
things that might
fail,
like
even
miserably.
Destined to fail. Yes.
And then had a tremendous cult following. So like it was so depressing to be like, "Oh my god, Blade Runner 2049, we're getting a sequel," and then it flopped. Just as, you know, so
I'm wishing for the best for Dune. I'm looking at the numbers. It's popping off right now. I'm for just that photo itself. So I'm wondering if these are just like, you know, we're looking at like pandemic numbers, everyone's staying at home, so it's right. The numbers are bigger. Mm-hmm. But I like to hope that people are actually really excited about Dune coming out this fall.
I don't want to keep comparing it to Blade Runner, but I do think it's fairly uncanny that this dude has taken on two huge cult things that mm-hmm.
the producers are successful. Like,
exactly. And
like, he can handle it. Look what he did.
Yeah. And basically Blade what I was going to say is like, what were the numbers for Blade Runner 2049 in terms of hype? Like, I mean, was that I mean, there was definitely hype among us, but you know,
I don't know. I feel like there was more hype about that movie than there was about Dune, but I don't know. Like, there's a very niche audience for this movie that's like super hyped right now. Mm-hmm. But I think the more we see from it and the more we get trailers, there might be more
also
hype around it.
Yeah, and also, again, like, Blade Runner 2049 was a sequel when this mm-hmm. is its own standalone.
A new adaptation. Yeah,
a new adaptation. Of the book. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
We'll see. I'm hoping for the best.
We'll see. Regardless.
It seems like a tough book to adapt. How do you feel about taking on this story and bringing it to a film from a new, fresh new perspective?
I think the thing that would... I always, like, try to think of something like Lord of the Rings in comparison to this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the core thing with Dune is that there's very core elements in Dune. There is a cohesive story. Unlike something like Lord of the Rings, which is just so expansive and so meticulous.
Scattered out characters.
So detailed. Yeah. I do think, I know the criticisms of David Lynch's Dune are merited, but it does hit some of the most specific points that mm-hmm. it needs to translate what the book is. I know there's gonna be a lot of people out there who adamantly disagree with me because you can never properly adapt anything, but I do think it can be done, and I think it's been done
mm-hmm.
to sort of thing. It's just maybe not done in the best way to satisfy the fans and also the broader mm-hmm. audience. So I don't know. There's a very tried and true story that is done in Dune. That can be done on screen and has been done on screen. So,
Yeah. I'm pretty hyped about the cast. I was already hyped about Denis taking this on, but the cast is just growing and growing and making me more and more excited. Rebecca Ferguson, Oscar Isaac, Josh Brolin, Stellan Skarsgård, Dave Bautista, Zendaya, Jason Momoa, Javier Bardem. My goodness.
It's not a Star Wars movie. It's not a Star Wars movie, too. I love it. It's still based off of a big franchise, but I'll take it. Mm-hmm. I'll go with this. It's not an original. It's not an IP, but I'll go for it. It's all good.
Yes. Yeah. And also, it's just, we don't really have, I know it sounds stupid, but in like a time where we have big comic book epics and, mm-hmm. and sprawling movie franchises, superhero franchises, we have not had a successful and good sci-fi one that isn't a part of, you know, like, of course, like, you know, Star Wars aside, but like there isn't really many other things in the playing field, I would say, that have really hit home. So mm-hmm. I would, Dune is one of those things where it's like, it's something that exists. There's a fan base for it. It's huge and it's massive and it's epic. And thankfully, it's not Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's not Disney.
I really
it's
hope it works.
It's not Marvel. It's not DC. And it's like, I'm excited to have at least another attempt at something that hopefully swoons the broader audience.
Cautiously.
We'll regardless, we're getting it.
Yeah. Cautiously optimistic. I really want this to succeed, honestly. Everything, all the pieces here seems like it's something that should work. Unfortunately, I'm just worried about that first trailer dropping and they get a little too into their own moody sense like they did for Blade Runner, and they're going to get way too much in the style over substance, and it's just going to cause people to glaze over it. Just go with an action trailer. I don't care if there's VO on the trailer.
No,
just hit them straight over the head with it first off.
Go for the lowest hanging fruit and just make an action trailer.
Yep.
Yeah.
And just get people in and then just show them Dune.
Yeah. Because no matter what, the people who care about it, people like us Dune fans, like they're going to go no matter what. It doesn't even matter. So when you're trying to make a trailer for that broader audience, like, yeah, you might as well Fast and Furious it a little bit.
Yeah.
You might as well just give us
I
that.
Wouldn't say Fast and Furious.
No, 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 honestly, no, I don't like it. There's, that there... movie, you better be, I want Jason Momoa riding a motorcycle on site.
My man. Woo!
Sandworm.
Just, yeah, my man.
Jason Momoa is riding a sandworm.
Yeah. I want Oscar Isaac.
He like passes off something to Dave Bautista.
You can
Oscar
edit it
Isaac
out. Just have
like
it just
below.
For the trailer. Just put it in the trailer. Just put it in the trailer.
Exactly.
Momoa
Oscar
on
Isaac
something.
Is just full on Star Wars mode. He's in this. He's like looking like Nathan Drake in the sand again.
Yes, and again. Same outfit.
Exactly.
All good.
Love
I'm
it.
Fine.
Love it.
So that's the trailer I want.
All right, the next section is You Should Be Watching, and this week we're talking about the best kaiju movies. Who here likes big monsters? Raise your hand. We do. We all do. And Kurt, if you're listening, you can't see that all Kurt right. is cuddling a Godzilla toy.
Yeah.
Tell us about this toy.
This particular Godzilla of mine is like a family memento. It's older than I am, and it's existed, I think, since 1985.
Who gave this to you?
I think this belonged to my dad, or maybe one of my uncles. It's like one of those things that's like been passed down for generations, or at least I guess
I like
a generation in this sense. But it's very near and dear to me. I have a smaller one, also from the exact same year. I don't know why I have both, but I do, and it's always existed with me as long as I've actually been alive. So here,
what a handsome monster that is right there. So Kurt, why don't you kick us off? What are the best kaiju movies?
The best ones? That's well. oof. Okay. I'll say at least the ones that I think, like, of course we can talk about Godzilla and
you should.
All of the different eras and forms.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's here. You should talk
he
about
is
him.
Here. I'm gonna be talking about you, dude. Don't worry, I promise. So the first one I want to mention, let me give some context. There's a constant, this constant thing with kaiju films and monster movies is like people only care, or at least it's assumed that we, the audience, like we only really care about monsters and we only want to see monsters beat the shit out of each other. Sorry for the swears.
we'll bleep it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And like the biggest dilemma with a lot of monster films is like, what do we really care about? Do we care? We need a storyline between these people to push something forward, but then at the end of the day, it's like we're really there just for the spectacle of monsters. And this is one of the reasons why I always like talk and love, why I always talk about King Kong specifically. But the host has always been like top tier. What can be done within the monster genre of because that film is a damn masterpiece.
It's a good movie.
It is a good movie. And I always love to talk about the movie because the core focus of that is a family and like the drama within that family and this Torin family that has to band together for one thing to save this girl from this monster. And I just think it's marvelous, dude. Bong Joon-ho never ceases to.
Bong Joon-ho's great.
Yeah.
Blow our minds.
But yeah. Okay. What did you think of the actual monster in that movie?
I love that thing. It's not a towering creature that is as tall as a building. But I think that thing, the first scene, the first shot when like the camera is going along, it's like the end of like by the shore of the water and you start to see people see something, but you don't see what they see. And you see like this panic as everybody begins to run. You first see that thing running. It's so terrifying.
It's a great shot.
So good. So good. And I like think whenever I think of the host, I always think of like that first scene when you like kind of see it and you don't see
and
it.
And then
I think
you start seeing it running towards you.
Yes. Like the full on. So I think that monster's awesome. It's not as iconically identifiable, but I still think as a whole, that movie, is extremely entertaining, has monsters in it, and also is compelling within its characters, which is three things often not found all within a movie, within a kaiju movie.
Nope.
Agreed.
So.
Okay. What else is on your list?
Next up is Shin Godzilla. So.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. I got to see this.
So Shin Godzilla was the last Japanese Godzilla film to be made until Legendary took over the rights. And like now has Godzilla for a certain contract. I think after this next Godzilla versus King Kong American
the Kong
film,
thing, it's over. Yeah.
Japan will be allowed to take the reins and do more Godzilla films. I think. I could be wrong. Mm. But Shin Godzilla is essentially a remake or retelling of the 1954 Godzilla. So it is a direct reaction. So where the 1954 Godzilla was a reaction to the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, this one is a reaction to the earthquakes, the Tokyo earthquakes that happened, as well as also the power plant thing that went down.
Meltdown.
In 2000. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would, I think, happened in 2011. I could be wrong. I apologize. And this Godzilla has probably the what I would consider the most horrifying looking version of him. You also get to see him churn from. It's incredible. You also get to see him churn into Godzilla over the span of this film, and it is a marvel. It is so, so good. And I also think it's like one of the best representations of scope, of actually showing what it's like to look up at this thing, with just still good framing and cinematography. And some people disagree with me on this, but I also, the human element of this movie is consistent and all the way through. And I do think those segments are just as compelling as seeing Godzilla in it. So that's one of the reasons why I always come back to this movie. And then the last on my list, I think, is going to be on all of our lists, and that is Pacific Rim.
Yes, that is on all of our lists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that is...
Greg, why do you love Pacific Rim?
Oh, Guillermo del Toro, Idris Elba's character. Mm-hmm. Everyone's hamming it up. So the characters...
Oh, yeah.
I love it. I love my, I guess, kaiju movies where everyone knows they're in a kaiju movie.
Yes.
And so they just got to go, okay, let me play my character here. Let me get in my role. Let me figure this out. But when you take it a step too far... Like the Godzilla films that we have here, and I think done by I think you just said it was what production company is that? Not Lionsgate. Oh my God, has it?
Is it Legendary?
The current run of, I think it's Legendary. Yeah. You'll notice that how they go a little too deep, but Pacific Rim hits the right note for
absolutely.
I know what movie I'm in. Mm-hmm. Got it. There's a giant monster attacking.
It's monsters versus mechs.
Yeah, that's it. Cool.
And all the characters we'll figure it out from there. Like. To the nth degree, you could take them and put them in an anime, and they would exist just fine.
It's so anime, and I love that. I think, it also has a lot of heart. It has a lot of humor. It doesn't take itself too seriously. And, I love Del Toro's monsters. They're a little Lovecraftian. I like that about them. The Jaegers were very massive and cool.
I have Pacific Rim toys. I should have brought those out.
Great battle scenes. That's cool. That's awesome. But, just like... excited the inner child in me that loved Power Rangers, right? And just loved mecha anime. So it was just really speaking to the core of
that
what
movie
I enjoyed,
is like a love letter to just Super Sentai and just the tokusatsu genre, like all the way, and does it so, so, so well. I love it.
God, that Guillermo del Toro's like press run for that movie it should be a movie in itself. I loved it. He cries in front of like a few Gundams. The man is just a treasure. I love him so much.
He is. I wish he had done the sequel. I wish they had just waited and let him do the sequel, because the sequel was very
I'm still shocked that movie one got a sequel, and that the sequel did better than the first one.
That's a shame. So, that is just a
darn
shame.
Box office is
right
weird.
There.
I know. I remember. I remember seeing it opening night, and then coming out of it the next day and seeing the numbers. And I think it was Grown Ups 2 beat it in the box office.
You're like, well, that's it. That's
and
enough.
It was like weirdly. I don't get too emotional. I try not to get too emotionally attached to like the business industry side of things. But that was one of those moments where I was like hurt. I was like, God.
Yeah.
Damn it.
That hurts. That really does hurt. Well, what about Godzilla? So are there any other classic Godzillas that you would recommend?
Should we talk about the American, the new American Godzilla films? Anything about them?
Well, I mean, I think it's at least worth saying. It'd be weird if one of us didn't say something about it.
Yeah.
Especially if we're talking so much about Godzilla movies.
Okay. Yeah. I'll admit, I watched 2014, and that was the end of my love affair with kaiju movies, at least for a while. That put an end to it. The second, spoiler alert, a certain character dies, Bryan Cranston, don't worry.
Opening 5 minutes.
I think it was like 15 to 20 minutes in the movie, and then you realize it was all just, they had you in the trailer. Like, gotcha, here's the real movie.
Yeah.
It's kicking off now.
Yeah.
I never again.
It will be
I fell asleep during King of the Monsters. in the theater.
And they tried. They really tried to get me to go see that movie, too. They, hey, we got one of your favorite directors. He's going to hold the reins of a god. And I thought, even then, no, not happening,
guys. Like, I was like, oh, no. Trick or Treat, Krampus? This is going to be it. Like, this is going to be the one. Not to be...
I was optimistic about that, and then it was completely forgettable.
But, I mean, you know, I will say this. I didn't personally like those movies, but I always have to be excited and optimistic about those who did see them and love them, and that might be their intro to Godzilla. And if not, I mean, like, that's, I'm still excited at the idea that people are going to see them and seeing big monster films and enjoying them. I just have to take myself aside and just acknowledge. I was like, I have 30 other Godzilla movies that I do love and I do enjoy, and they're not going anywhere.
So
these movies are hard to make.
So people that didn't watch those older Godzilla movies, what would you recommend going back to?
Okay. I would say, so one of them, so Godzilla versus King Kong, it's a weird one because it is Godzilla versus an American created kaiju monster. King Kong is in many ways the first OG kaiju. And Godzilla originally was supposed to be a King Kong ripoff until, oh my God, why am I drawing a blank? Anyways, until it was brought into the hands of the rightful master and made it into what it is. Why? I made a True Fiction episode about this and I'm stumbling right now. Anyways, I'd rather just not say it than get it wrong. But Godzilla versus King Kong was a weird way of hitting the American audience, so that's why they had King Kong, but it also still has a satire on television and movie producers and sensationalizing like the era of TV at the time. And it's also ridiculous. Like the fight scenes between King Kong and Godzilla are so, so goofy and so animated and so over the top. Like to me, that was the turning point when Godzilla became like the superhero kind of era that we all know, that we generally know him for. So Godzilla versus King Kong, Godzilla versus Hedorah, because that one is also a trippy, weird one, and also a satire on pollution. I like the ones that are satires, apparently.
Message. Gotta have that message.
Message. And then there's a lot of good ones through the second era, but I do want to say we have, I do have two satirical versions, but then my favorite one, which is the all-encompassing stupid entertaining Godzilla movie, which is Godzilla Final Wars, which is the most crowd, which is the most fan-pleasing one of them all, because it has
the end game
it
of
is
Godzilla
yes
movies.
Yes, it has every single, it has just an obscene amount of references and nods and homages to all these monsters. It is so stupid. There's a
Godzilla's picking up Thor's hammer. Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean he fights the American remake Godzilla in it, which is only known as Zilla. And it's done, and it's, this fight scene lasts, I'm not joking, 20 seconds, and it's to Sum 41. And it's so out of place. I'm not kidding you. And it's so out of place and it's so abrupt. Godzilla just hits his tail into Zilla.
I need to watch this movie.
And Zilla smashes into an iconic building in Australia, blows up, and dies. And it's all to Sum 41. And that's it.
Wow.
And then...
sounds like a dream I had in 2001.
And then that's intercut. And then those Godzilla scenes are intercut with, again, like live-action anime characters pretty much doing fights on motorcycles. And to me, that's...
amazing.
That's like, if you're not a Godzilla fan and you just want... or let me say, if you just like Godzilla for stupidness, for like the stupid joy over the topness, that's the one, is Godzilla Final Wars. It's exhausting.
Got it.
It's like a 2.5 hour like anime. It's incredible. It's very, very good. That's my recommendation.
Nice. I want to give one last shout out to Cloverfield. I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great use of found footage. POV had an incredible viral marketing campaign.
I feel like that's what that movie
got me super hyped for that movie. Yeah, that was like the essence of that movie. Just generating the hype for it was what they did best. Then the actual movie itself was fun. I enjoyed it. And I watched it in New York City at a movie theater. So when I walked out, I was like very like looking around, trying to see a monster. It was pretty creepy, but it was good. I enjoyed that movie a lot.
The marketing campaign was better than the movie.
I think that's
actually, no, that's not true.
I think that's
Paranormal Activity. That's Yeah, that's Paranormal Activity,
Blair Witch,
the first film, and Blair Witch. Yeah, those are the two, I think. Always horror, I think, actually will always play out because people are, you know, scared of things. So right. That's always going to work. Cloverfield, God, that movie.
I remember when that movie came out, there wasn't a single person who was like, what is it? What is this thing? Like, we have, is this going to be a movie? Is it found footage? Like, is it going to be a dumb kaiju movie? Like, I remember the hype around that movie just purely out of like, what is it? And of course, like, the movie experience, the movie theater experience was incredible for me. But at the end of the day, I was like, as a dude who likes big monster movies, I was like so excited the idea of like, maybe J.J. Abrams is going to support, is it Matt Reeves who directed that?
I think it was Gareth Edwards or Matt Reeves. The two of them. You can always check.
No, hold I remember.
Let's check it.
I'm pretty sure, if I'm wrong, I thought it was Matt Reeves because I was, for the longest time, I didn't want to see one of his movies because of Cloverfield. And then I thought Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was like one of the best movies I've seen of the decade.
And Matt Reeves, you nailed it. You know your stuff. But it was written by Drew Goddard.
Because of Matt Reeves, that Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is great. But let's keep going.
Yeah. So, that's it. I appreciate his existence, especially in comparison to what we have now for American kaiju films.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right, that wraps up this episode of You Should Be Watching. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you want any recommendations or want to find something to watch on Netflix or Hulu, let us know what you're looking for by emailing us at ysbw@gamespot.com. That's ysbw@gamespot.com. You can also listen to this show on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher. So take your pick. Follow us and subscribe. And also you can follow us and reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @Chastity_V.
I'm Greg. @GregSpotThomas.
And Kurt?
And I am @Kurt_Indovina.
Spell that out, please.
K-U-R-T underscore I-N-D-O-V-I-N-A.
Very nice. Thank you guys so much for checking us out, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.